Good morning and welcome to The People's Business, a production of the Fiscal Policy Institute and WRPI's Public Affairs Committee, and a part of WRPI's regular Tuesday morning feature, Capital District Progressive Radio. I'm Frank Morrow, Executive Director Emeritus of the Fiscal Policy Institute, and I'm pleased to be joined in the studio by Brian McDonald, AFSCME New York's Legislative and Political Director, and Ron Deutsch, Executive Director of New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Dick Dady, the Executive Director of Citizens Union, and a proponent of the redistricting constitutional amendment that will be on the general election ballot in New York State 4 weeks from today on November 4th, 2014. And at 8:30 a.m., we'll hear the other side of the story when we'll be speaking with Jesse Lehman, the Executive Director of Effective New York, which is part of the Vote No on Prop 1 campaign. So there are going to be the two sides of the debate about whether or not the proposed constitutional amendment that's on the ballot on November 4th that changes the way redistricting of congressional seats and state legislative seats is done every 10 years, whether or not that change is a step forward or a step backwards. And we have representatives of two good government groups that represent two sides of this issue. So the so-called good government community has divided on this issue, and we'll hear both sides of that issue. But before we hear from Dick Dady and Jesse Lehman about legislative redistricting, we have a few minutes to catch up on some current developments regarding taxes and state budget. Before we talk about the New York State budget process, which the budget director, Bob Megna, Governor Cuomo's budget director, kicked off last week with his so-called call letter. Ron, anything happened since last month on the audits of real estate partnerships, or is that still lost in the ozone someplace?
That's still in the abyss, I think, Frank. We haven't been able to get the Attorney General, the State Comptroller, Department of Tax and Finance that interested in this. I think it's a sad commentary on our tax system here in New York, basically allowing these real estate partnerships to get off scot-free in terms of taxes that they should be paying, and they're not. So, but I think, you know, we're still continuing to move this forward. We're looking at the New York City Department of Finance now and suggesting that they, in fact, start looking into this, because New York City really is the epicenter of these real estate partnerships. So we're doing a little bit of an end run around the state at this point.
Well, that's a very good idea. Just some background on that. New York City has an income tax like a state income tax, and whereas all the states with income taxes have information sharing agreements with the IRS to exchange information for purposes of audits and enforcement, New York City also has such an agreement with the IRS. So that's not far-fetched, because in a lot of ways, New York City's tax system is like a state tax system.
Yeah, we thought that New York City would be a great place, and the Department of Finance would be the right place to start looking at this if we could get them interested. So we're in conversation with them now about this issue, and we're hoping to continue to move it forward.
Okay, so let's turn to the budget process. Last week, October 1st, the midpoint of the fiscal year, our fiscal year starts April 1st, so that's the six-month point, and by the end of October, we're supposed to have from the governor his mid-year budget update, so we'll see what type of a spin, positive or negative, he puts on that. Governor Cuomo has not been too concerned in his first several years in office about deadlines for the mid-year budget update. He hasn't gotten in the habit of submitting it on time. He sort of thumped his nose at it as a somewhat irrelevant requirement. The state technically has a quick start budget process, and when asked about why he wasn't using the quick start budget process, he sort of was taken aback and said they call it quick start and they never got the budget done on time. So he sets his own rules, and they might be better than the law, but there's this old saying about how we need a government of laws, not of men.
He does seem to work by his own set of rules, doesn't he? He seems to rewrite the rules. He likes to rewrite history. But that aside, you know, I think the budget director did issue the call, the so-called call letter. But so listeners should know that this call letter is basically a letter from the State Division of Budget to all the state agency commissioners, asking them to submit their proposed budgets for the coming year. And unfortunately, once again, the state is requesting that all state agencies hold spending flat, zero increase yet again, which I think we're on, what, the fifth year of that now? So I think it does quite a disservice to all these services that the state is trying to provide. We've been really squeezing them over the last few years.
I think for state agencies, it's probably about 6 years because
right. Under Patterson it was as well.
For state agencies, it's been flat in all four of Governor Cuomo's years. And in David Patterson's first budget, it wasn't just flat. The 2009-2010 right, budget was the first one he submitted. He had to actually do cuts, and he had to be pretty conservative and cut a lot in his second year also. So even though the economy is somewhat is back and the state has, compared to the Patterson years when we were really scratching the bottom right. of the barrel on a cash basis, we're better off now on a cash basis than we are actually on an accrual basis because we've gotten all these one-time settlements.
Yeah, we're flush now, right? We've got surplus.
We also have Brian McDonald with us in the studio. Brian's the legislative and political director of AFSCME New York. Any thoughts on the governor's call for another year of austerity?
Well, so again, they're calling for these flat budgets. And Frank, you mentioned we've got a multi-billion dollar budget surplus. I don't think anyone is calling for a spending of non-recurring revenues. But again, it shows sort of the inflexibility in the Cuomo approach to governing, that that they're inflexible with their budgets, that they're sort of governing by press release, by always saying that they that we shouldn't even look at expanding the role of government and delivering these services. So if, as an observer watching the way they approach governing, it's a little frustrating.
It sounds like it's, I think for a lot of people, it's probably more than frustrating. Some of the services that have been cut back a lot are services that help some of the neediest people. I noticed some good news on this regard, Ron, from New York City. New York City has a former legal services head heading the Human Resources Administration
right.
now. So in terms of aid and care for the needy, what's going on in New York City that has some positive implications?
Well, I think it's interesting. So I was at the Hunger Action Network's annual meeting last Monday, in New York City. And Steve Banks, who is the new commissioner, as you pointed out, of the Human Resources Administration in New York, is someone who's been a very frequent critic of the Human Resources Administration, is now heading it up. So what he's been doing is really looking at reorganizing and reshuffling the deck at HRA in New York City and trying to make it far more responsive to the needs of the consumers who are using those services than it had been in the past. So I think I'm very excited about what Commissioner Banks is doing in New York City and you know, the fact that he's been pushing forward with a lot of reforms and trying to make the HRA more responsive to the needs of people. But I think getting back to the state budget issue, too, you know, we've been cutting human services over the last few years. And certainly while Andrew Cuomo's been in office, that's been cut each year. Under the Patterson administration, it was cut severely. So a lot of the services that had been provided in the past are not available anymore. So and what do we see as a result of that? We certainly are seeing a great deal of child poverty across our upstate cities and in areas of New York City. I mean, child poverty rates hovering around 50% in Syracuse and all Rochester, Buffalo, Schenectady. So, you know, these are issues that need to be addressed. And if we're going to continue to cut funding for these programs, the problem's only going to get worse.
During the heart of the recession, There were some real administrative problems with HRA not having enough staffing for things like food stamps. Has that problem been taken care of, Brian?
No, we don't think that the problem's been taken care of at all. And in fact, that we think that these essential needs are being ignored. You know, Ron mentioned that the different philosophy that the that New York City takes with their budgeting. Their budgeting approach is very different, and it has to deal with reality and the facts on the ground. And that's why we sometimes complain that the Cuomo administration is budgeting by press release. The de Blasio administration is looking at the real needs, and the Cuomo administration is not.
So we're as you can probably tell, we're having some technical problems. We have some microphones that are working and some that aren't. So you probably didn't hear the prescient remarks of Brian McDonald.
They were great, though. Thank you, Brian.
Talking about the continuing staffing problems.
I feel very informed.
HRA in New York City. We'll try to come back to this later in the program, but we have to change gears right now because we have the great pleasure of being joined on the telephone by Dick Dady, the executive director of Citizens Union, a 117-year-old good government organization in New York City, and of the Citizens Union Foundation, the research and education affiliate of Citizens Union. Dick, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
This is Brian McDonald, and I'd also like to welcome our guest, Dick Dady, to the People's Business here on WRPI Troy. Dick, before we ask you to explain the constitutional redistricting amendment that New Yorkers will be voting on 4 weeks from today in the November 4th election, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Citizens Union and the role it plays in New York City government and politics?
Sure. I mean, we were founded back in the late 1890s in response to the corruption of Tammany Hall and the affairs of the city of New York. And so for, you know, nearly 120 years now, we've been serving as a watchdog on city and state government, holding government accountable, keeping elected officials honest, and serving the public interest, and fighting for good government and political reform.
Well, you certainly have been doing a great job for well over 100 years. I know that you haven't been at the helm for over 100 years, though. But
so some days it feels like it.
Yeah, but it does.
But Dick's a long timer. You've been there more than 10 years, right?
Well,
I've been here 10 years, almost 11 years.
Yeah,
so
wow.
Who's counting?
Does it seem longer? This is Ron Deutsch. I also want to welcome you to our show, The People's Business, here on WRPI in Troy. It's a pleasure to have you here. Maybe you could tell our listeners generally about the three referenda that are going to be on the ballot throughout New York on November 4th. And obviously, you know, we want to pay more attention to the proposal that would change the way New York State does congressional and state legislative redistricting every 10 years after the decennial census.
Sure. So there are three questions. One is Prop 1 that has to deal with reforming the way by which legislative maps are drawn every 10 years. The second one is an education bond issue that will fund information infrastructure in our schools. And then also the third one amends the state constitution to allow the aging of bills to take place electronically as opposed to simply having them be printed and sit on the desks in the chambers of the two houses for the 3 days that are required by the state constitution. The aging requirement of 3 days will still be enforced, but they will be available to the legislators online if this thing is passed.
Before we leave that, because we want to use your expertise on the redistricting amendment, but on the 3 day rule, the change is just that the bill still has to be available to members for 3 days. It's just that it has to be available to them electronically by some sort of device on their desks, not in hard copy. But I've been wondering if the three-day rule itself is outmoded, because one of the implications, and I don't know if this is good or bad, one of the things you don't have in New York because of the three-day rule is amendments being offered during debates on the floor. Is the three-day rule on balance good or bad?
I think on balance it's very good because it does, as long as it's observed. I mean, as you know, we've seen many abuses of it throughout the years where bills pop up and they are, not allowed to age because of an order from the governor. But I think it does give an opportunity for the legislator and the public to, read the bill, understand the intent of the bill, and analyze and comment on it before it is passed. But you're exactly right. I mean, amendments, bills don't necessarily get debated in the way that they probably should. But the fact that the infrastructure is there to require this, that bills age 3 days, is a good thing. And you know, it would be wonderful to see more open debate in the Assembly and the Senate on these bills, and without a preordained outcome. As you well know, many of these issues, if not all of them, when they're finally addressed on the floor of the chamber, we know exactly how it's going to happen. It's going to pass. The only question is by what margin.
Okay. We could talk more about this, but let's turn to redistricting. And what is happening? What does this amendment do?
Well, this amendment alters the state constitution to change the way in which district lines are drawn every 50 years. Right now, the legislature has full authority to draw the lines, and they're advised by an advisory commission that is made up of legislators that is controlled by the majority parties. So the legislature serves essentially as a rubber stamp, and the whole process is controlled by the legislative leaders of each of the two houses. And as we know, a lot of these lines are twisted and they curve to serve the partisan interests of whoever's in control of the houses. And oftentimes that cuts down on competition. You know, we have a very high incumbent reelection rate, 97% in 2012. As your listeners know, too, we've seen a rise in public corruption to where now 28 legislators have been forced from office in recent years due to corruption or ethical scandals. And in the 2012 general election, 28% of all incumbents went unopposed. Which just shows how uncompetitive our elections are here in New York State. So this Prop 1 creates a new process. It essentially, the key element to this is it bans partisan gerrymandering, which means that no legislative district, should this amendment pass, could be drawn to favor or disfavor incumbents, challengers, or political parties. And as you both well know from being astute participants, observers of the political process, and participants in Albany, that's how both chambers get their power. They draw these maps to suit their political interests and advantage them over the other party in the House. And this practice would be banned in the Constitution and actually give New Yorkers the legal authority to take the legislature to court should partisan lines be drawn in the future. New York Floridian voters, to great effect, passed a similar amendment to their state constitution in 2010 and used it by taking the legislature to court in 2012 and in 2014. And it was only because of that provision about banning partisan gerrymandering and not drawing districts for political advantage did the courts have the authority to weigh in on what is a very political decision and throw out the lines for several congressional districts as well as the entire legislature in 2012.
So besides outlawing partisan gerrymandering, there's also a commission created. What's the structure of the commission, and how would that work?
There is a commission created, a 10-member commission, where each of the four legislative leaders, two from the Assembly, two from the Senate, one from the majority party, or two from the majority party, two from the minority party. Those four appoint two people each for a total of eight, and then those eight appoint another two who are neither Republican nor Democrat. You have a 10-member commission, and any plan that has to get through to the commission to go to the legislature for final approval has to receive the supermajority support of seven. So what that means is that no one leader, no one House, and no one political party controls the process, which is the exact opposite as it is now. Right now, the Assembly Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader control the outcome because of their 2-to-1 majority on lat 4. And so in order for any plan to come out, the parties in control of each of the two houses only can cobble together four. They got to add three more to get to seven. So that will require consensus and collaboration in trying to come up with a plan that appeals to both parties, to both houses, and even to the minority parties. And so it's a politically balanced commission with a built-in incentive to compromise and try and create consensus.
Dick, we should note that good government groups are divided on this issue. What do you say to critics who maintain that the new process will be far too similar to the old process and that the people on this board are just going to be more concerned about incumbent protection?
Well, number one, we've had this rigged system of redistricting in New York State for 50 years now and haven't been able to reform it. As you probably can recall, in 2010, working with Ed Koch, Citizens Union got the support of 184 legislators to say that they would, if elected, they would ensure that they would create a nonpartisan redistricting commission for the 2012 elections. 184. What happened in 2012? Not one thing. They used the old system. They gerrymandered the districts again. And, partisan advantage won out in the 2012 elections. It's so difficult to reform this process because it requires the legislature giving up power. And this is the core element to much of the power that the legislative leaders have. And it was very difficult to get them to give up any kind of power. And they only did so because of the threat of a veto by Governor Cuomo to veto the lines in 2012. And so we're not going to have this opportunity to come around again in 5, 10, and probably 15 years to reform this process. And so we don't think that the perfect should be the enemy of the good in this situation. And granted, this is not the end-all solution, and we hope that this would provide a new foundation for us to enact further reforms as we try and even strengthen this process going forward.
After the 2010 elections that saw a lot of Republican governor, a huge Republican sweep across the country in places like Texas and Wisconsin, in Michigan, where they really did use the redistricting process to safen their own lines. What do you say to critics who say, look, New York is a blue state. Why should Democrats unilaterally disarm in New York and give up, what might be an advantage for them when all across the country, Republicans are solidifying and maintaining their gains?
I think that whether New Yorkers lean left or lean right, we want fairness in our politics. We want the rules of the game to be able to be applied equally to all, regardless of their strength in numbers in the populace or the voter makeup. And so, in order for us to believe in the trust of action by our government, we want our elected officials, fairly elected. We want a process that is treats all equally. And I don't want the regardless of what's happening in the rest of the country, I want New York State to be a model in this country as to what fair redistricting is about. And I think that, our philosophy of government, our tenets of democracy, respect the voices of the minority and rule against, prevent the rule of tyranny by the majority. And so this creates a very, fair and balanced process that is inclusive of all voices. And so whatever plan comes out, which will be a fair plan, it will recognize, where people live and are represented, but it will create a fair process that we will have trust in.
So let me ask you, Dick, recently, just around the corner from where we are here at WRPI in Troy, a Rensselaer court basically ruled that we were going to remove the word independent from the proposal. Do you think that was fair? Do you support that ruling, or do you think that was unjust?
Well, keep in mind that the removal of that word from the ballot language was immaterial to the substance of the actual amendment. It didn't change the amendment at all. We still have a proposal that is fair and balanced and takes power away from the legislature like it never has. And gives New Yorkers the power to sue the legislature if they don't abide by this ban against partisan gerrymandering. The State Board of Elections only took that language because it's in the constitutional amendment. I mean, the commission, whether you like it or not, is described as an independent commission. I don't know if I would have chosen those words if I was writing it by myself, but the State Board of Elections didn't overreach by including that word. They were simply lifting from the amendment. and the judge, interfered by essentially trying to change the language of the constitutional amendment, which, you know, is open for debate, but the Board of Elections decided not to pursue it because they were under such a tight time frame to get the question out to the local county boards for printing and being part of the November ballot.
Hmm. So not to be cynical, but if the constitutional amendment is adopted and the Constitution then officially says that the commission is independent, it's sort of like the provision in the opening of the judiciary article that Judge Kaye always makes fun of, that starts out by saying New York State shall have a unified court system.
Good point. But, you know, that word is, I mean, it's just a descriptive
it's
word.
It's just a word. No, I agree.
It's a descriptive word. And you know, but there is a lot of the process by which this plan is adopted. There creates a fair amount of space and distance from the legislature that we currently don't have.
Right. Yeah. Now, in fact, one big difference. You raised an important point that people should understand. The current redistricting for the last four redistrictings, this from the 80, 90, 2000, and 2010 censuses, all four of those redistrictings were done with divided party control, with a Republican majority in the Senate and a Democratic majority in the Assembly. And so the two majorities basically deferred to each other. And I think this was clearly implied by something you said a little while ago, that the Assembly districts were drawn on balance to favor the Democrats and the Senate districts were drawn on balance to favor the Republicans. Hmm. One big change seems to be that in this new commission, the minority leaders have the same say as the majority leaders. They all four of them have two appointees each. So is this... And you can tell me if this is correct. I've read that this constitutional amendment has a provision that existing districts are supposed to serve as the starting point for new districts.
Now, it's one of several criteria, but it's not actually the existing districts. It's the core of the existing districts, and that's been that point has been overplayed because the core of existing districts is the center of the district. We know when we look at no matter how badly warped or maligned a district might be, we know where that core is. Just like we know where the core of an apple is, it doesn't include the stem or the leaf that's attached to it. The core of an existing district wouldn't include all the appendages. It would try and go right to the core of that existing district. But that's a secondary consideration to the primary consideration that no district, because the state constitution amendment is very directive on this, it says, shall not be drawn to favor or disfavor incumbents, challengers, or political parties. That's the key top criteria because of the word shall not, or the
right.
two words shall not.
Well, what do you think?
Whereas with the core of legislative districts, it says shall consider, right? So that has far less... directive criteria than the other one.
What do you think the implication is of giving the minority leaders equal appointment power with the majority leaders?
It speaks to fairness in our politics. Let's have fair elections where issues can be discussed, where we have competitive elections, where candidates are encouraged to run against each other. I mean, it's just phenomenal that the way that, as you pointed out earlier, the way the district lines are drawn, it favors the parties in control. In 2012, 42 in the general election, 42% of all candidates running faced no major party opposition. 42%. So that means Republicans ran with no Republican, or Republicans ran with no Democratic opponent, Democrats ran with no Republican opponent, and 42% of all contests. What this does is it fosters competition, and we know that competition is the source of a robust discussion of our issues, so that we have clear choices when we go to the ballot box, and then we can vote to the left, we can vote to the right, we can vote for whoever, but give us choice by having fair A fair redistricting process will lead to more competitive elections. That will give voters greater choice to actually have a say in who serves them in Albany.
Very good. Dick, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
This is The People's Business on WRPI Troy, and we've been speaking with Dick Dady, the Executive Director of Citizens Union. Dick, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me on. Have a good day.
Thank you. You can see some of Dick's arguments in favor at a website, Votes. Let me get this right. Vote yes for the number 4 progress.org. Vote yes for progress.org. After a brief break, we'll be back to speak with Jesse Lehman, the executive director of Effective New York. While our last guest, Dick Dady, is a proponent of the redistricting amendment that will be on the ballot in November, Jesse Lehman is working for the defeat of that proposal.
Hello, this is Mark O'Connor, and when I'm in Troy, I listen to WRPI Troy.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome back to The People's Business here on WRPI Troy. I'm Frank Morrow, Executive Director of the Fiscal Policy Institute, and I'm in the studio with Brian McDonnell, AFSCME New York's Legislative and Political Director, and Ron Deutsch, Executive Director of New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. And we're joined on the telephone by...
Hi, this is Jesse Lehman from the No on Prop 1 campaign.
Thank you, Jesse.
How you doing, Jesse? We have you announce yourself today. Thank
Anytime.
You for coming on the show today and being on The People's Business here at WRPI in Troy. Before we get into what's wrong with the redistricting constitutional amendment that'll be on the ballot 4 weeks from today, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Effective New York and what you guys are up to?
Sure. Well, actually, this campaign is important enough, and there's another one as well, that I've actually left Effective New York just to run the No on Prop 1 campaign,
wow.
And the other one is actually very important, and we're not going to have time to talk about it, which is the Fair Elections for New York campaign, which is the
right.
legislative effort to reform campaign finance in New York State, which is the other big thing that we know distorts our politics. It's all about money, and it's also a fair amount about the maps. And if we had better maps and a fair system of campaign finance, we might have an Albany that actually worked for the people.
Jesse, this is Brian McDonnell. I'd also like to welcome you to our show. Before you came on today, we had Dick Dady from Citizens Union telling us about he was a proponent of the constitutional changes. Can you tell us a little bit about the Vote No on Prop 1 campaign and why do you think it's a bad idea to change our state constitution in this way?
Sure. So this campaign, the Vote No campaign, was actually put together by a large coalition of organizations. Common Cause New York, NYPERG, Effective New York, the group that I left, the NAACP New York State Conference has endorsed, Citizen Action of New York, Make the Road, Community Voices Heard, New York Communities for Change, and so on. And the reason that this wide variety of groups that spans not just the good government community, but also a lot of community organizing organizations are opposed is that we agree with Dick, you know, with Citizens Union, that the system as it exists now is no good. We completely agree that New York State deserves to have some reform, massive reform, in the redistricting process. Where we disagree is that this amendment doesn't actually do anything like that. It is sort of a false reform amendment. It's a sham, to use the words of the Albany Times Union editorial board, designed to fool people who want reform into thinking that this is reform so that the same people can keep doing what they've been doing for years and have some political cover to do it.
So it's odd. I mean, you know, groups like Citizen Union and League of Women Voters are usually on the same page with you guys. I'm just wondering, you know, why do you think that they're actively supporting this? Are they under the impression that something is better than nothing at this point, that if we don't do something right now, we're not going to get any type of change in the future? You know, I'm not asking you to read their minds necessarily, but, you know, you've worked with these groups for a long time and, you know, worked hand in hand with them on many different issues.
That's absolutely right.
And I'm wondering, you know, why do you think they're so adamantly in support of this while you guys, you know, think this is really a bad piece of legislation?
Well, you know, you asked Dick, I mean, I was listening on the air, you asked Dick a very similar question, and I actually think that his answer was fairly telling about his position. He talked about how difficult it is, nearly impossible, to reform the process. And I think there's a little bit of resignation there, right? The idea that, and he's right, Albany is a hard place to be a reformer. Right?
Change does not come easy in our town.
Right. And so I think
I thought that Andrew Cuomo said we have a new New York.
Frank,
I will
Frank,
not comment
not
on that. I'll let you guys editorialize.
The old new New York. But continue, Jesse. Sorry.
Right. So I think that there is some degree of resignation there, that, you know, here is an amendment that purports to be reform, and that's the first time we've had anything like that on, you know, on the ballot, about at least about the redistricting process, you know, in a generation, or certainly in the memory of the people working there. So I think that there is some desire to hope, to sort of squint and look at it through just the right light and see the reform where it isn't, and, you know, believe in more than you ought to believe about this.
If you believe hard enough.
Right.
So we were talking about this during the break. So the commission would be divided 2-2-2-2, right? Members of the minority and the majority parties in each chamber, and then they would have two additional sort of independent members who are appointed by the other eight. So what's the problem with that? Walk us through your biggest concerns about that.
Right. So this is really the central problem with this amendment, and the reason why, from the perspective of our coalition, as bad as the status quo is, this amendment would actually make things worse in New York. And the crux of it is what you believe will work and not work about this commission. If you believe that the commission will somehow be a bunch of good government people trying to do the right thing for New York State and, you know, nobly fighting against the legislature, then maybe you should support this. But none of us believe that. The commission is appointed directly by the legislature. So that's the first thing to understand, right? The legislative leaders get to choose who's on it. In fact, it goes a little farther than that. The commission is paid salaries. The salaries amounts are determined by the legislature. And then when the commission actually draws its draft maps, they're not final. They do not become the maps for New York State. They have to go back to the legislature for legislative approval. So we reject completely the notion that this is an independent commission, or really anything other than an arm of the legislature. So that's the first problem. The same people who've been gerrymandering the maps for decades would still be in control, but would have this smokescreen of commission to say, oh, somebody else drew the maps, it wasn't us, when indeed it could still be the very same staff people working in the very same rooms, just passing it through, you know, a new set of figureheads.
Right. So ultimately, this group does its work, proposes new district lines. The legislature then has veto power, basically, right? They can say, you know what? Nice job, but I don't think so. We're going to change this. We're going to change that. And, you know, so I'm not sure, you know, how much there doesn't seem to be much teeth to this effort.
Well, That's right, except the only thing here that actually makes this worse is, you alluded to it in one of your questions earlier to Dick, the strange anti-democratic nature of the appointments to the commission and the approval of the commission's maps. So, you know, as this, as it works currently in New York State, as bad as it is, the voters have at least an indirect sway over the process. If between now and 2020 they elect a Democratic state senate, which seems like a fairly likely possibility, right? Whether it's this year or in 2 years or in 6 years, then that Democratic state senate, along with the Democratic assembly and the presumably Democratic governor in 2020, you know, who knows, would have the authority to draw the maps together. Now, they might draw, you know, I'm sure they would, in fact, draw maps that favor the Democratic Party, but there's also a lot of pressure within Democratic circles for reform, to not be, you know, excessively abusing the system to their advantage. This amendment would strip the voters of that power. Under this amendment, the Republican Party in New York State maintains a 50-50 equal say, a veto on the outcome, even if the voters of New York put them in the minority in every branch of the legislature. I think it was a provision, I believe, written by the Republican leaders of the legislature to protect them in the event that the voters rejected them between now and 2020.
Explain the provision you're talking about.
So the commission is appointed half by the leaders of, you know, each of the two chambers, right? But there's these special voting rules. So under the special voting rules, if the two chambers are still controlled by two different parties, the commission can approve maps with a simple majority, and it only requires the appointees of the majority leaders of the two bodies, the Assembly and the Senate, to have voted for the maps. So in other words, the amendment assumes that these appointees are simply puppets of the leaders in the legislature. And assuming that there is a Republican Senate leader and a Democratic Assembly leader, it allows the puppets of just those two men to have a veto power over the outcome. But the amendment says that if one party should control both houses, and of course that would have to be the Democratic Party in New York State, the Republicans are not going to be taking the Assembly anytime in our lifetimes, right? If one party controls the two houses, then the two minority leaders of the two chambers also have that veto power. Their appointees to the commission now must vote for the maps in order to be passed, which is a strange and, you know, convoluted way of protecting the Republican Party at all costs, so that we get the same maps we've been getting. The bipartisan gerrymander is what it's called, where Democrats are able to gerrymander the Assembly, Republicans are able to gerrymander the Senate, and the two of them shake hands and pretend like nothing just happened.
So then, Jesse, what's the right solution? So it sounds to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you think that partisan redistricting is better in a place like New York because it's going to benefit the Democrats? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think either one is good, right? I don't want to commend partisan gerrymandering any more than bipartisan gerrymandering. But the problems that we've had and all of the sins that Dick Dady listed of the current system have come about through this bipartisan compromise, where both chambers are designed to be maximally uncompetitive, but for two different parties. We should probably try something different, and if the voters decide that they want Democrats in control of New York, you know, there ought to be some respect for that democratic process and allow those Democrats that are elected by the people to actually govern and hopefully, you know, under pressure from a lot of us, do a better job than the Republican state senators have done on things like redistricting. So I would not, you know, give them a free pass if they get the majority to go ahead and gerrymander the maps for themselves. I'd like to pressure them. But we know that the current powers that be have no interest in that sort of reform, and this amendment just enshrines those current powers that be into the Constitution and makes them the permanent powers over redistricting.
Good point. So, Jesse, let me ask you this. If you're successful, right? We vote no on Prop 1, goes down in flames. What's the alternative? What are you going to propose? What do we do if we have nothing?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what we ought to have, though I'll be honest, I'll agree with Dick that I don't think it's going to happen next year or anything like that. Right? What we ought to have is a truly independent commission. This exists in other states. It's not a crazy idea. California has a commission that no legislatures are able to appoint. Several other states have commissions where members are appointed, some by the legislature, some by governors, some by attorney general. Sometimes the state Supreme Court chief justice has a seat on the commission. So we ought to have a truly independent commission to draw the maps instead of the legislature. That would be step one. And I think the other thing is that we ought to have clear rules about what the maps can be. Dick talked about some of the rules written into this amendment. The trouble is that they're not ranked in any way, and they're not really clear. And there's just too many principles written into the amendment. The principles contradict each other, and that will allow the gerrymanderers to cherry pick, to pick and choose what they want in order to get the lines that they need. We should have a very simple, clear instruction that, you know, districts should be drawn to maximize the number of competitive elections or to drawn to have clear landmarks as boundaries. So I think there are principles that we could all agree on that we ought to have in New York. I don't believe that's going to happen under this legislature, you know, in the next few years, but it doesn't have to. We have until 2022 before any of this is relevant. There's no reason to pass a bad amendment in 2014 to govern the process in 2022. I'd like to think that between now and then, we could do substantially better than this amendment.
Has the legislature passed enacted legislation that takes effect if the constitutional amendment is defeated?
They passed one at the time. But that was only if they failed to pass the amendment. So they, as part of the deal to get their terrible 2012 maps, they had to agree, this is where the political cover comes in, to pass this amendment. And an amendment requires passage in two different legislatures, so there was some concern at the time that they would only pass it once and then never come back to it. So they passed governing legislation that sort of tied their hands and made them pass it a second time. But if this amendment is defeated, the status quo rules, the bad status quo, and, you know, that's the downside, but we think the status quo, as bad as it is actually better than what would take effect if this amendment were passed.
So the default legislation only would have taken effect if the legislature failed to approve the amendment, not if the voters failed to approve it.
That's right, and the default legislation mirrored the amendment. So it was really just a way to tie their hands to make them vote for the amendment. It was sort of, whether you vote for it or not, something like this is going to take effect.
I think this is a fascinating issue, and I think that both sides today in this debate would argue that there's a problem with the current system. And, you know, if you look at just beyond New York at what's happening in Congress right now, where we have 435 members, but only about 35 seats are actually in play in each election to determine the majority of that very important body. It's really bad for democracy, the current system that we have in place. And the fact that we've got 50 different systems around the country determining who's going to be sent to Congress, and there are so few, you know, close elections that are going to determine who controls the House of Representatives, it's really a fascinating issue to me.
Yeah, it is terrible. The other thing that you didn't point out about those 435, you know that in 2012, the last congressional election nationwide, more voters in the United States actually voted to have a Democratic member of Congress represent them than a Republican. But because of legislative gerrymandering, there are roughly 20 more Republicans in the House than Democrats.
Isn't this a problem inherent in single-member districts, winner-take-all elections, that when you base your representational system on geography, even if you had the fairest districts in the world, you're going to have some areas that are primarily Republican where the Democrats don't have a chance, so they don't really compete, and some that are primarily Democratic where the Republicans don't compete. This goes back to the origins of Citizens Union. Citizens Union for decades was a proponent of proportional representation. Do we need some form of proportional representation?
Yeah, you could sell me on proportional representation in a minute. that would be an easy sell for a lot of good government folks, I think. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, is it going to happen tomorrow? No, of course not. But there are a lot of better alternatives to what we've got, and better alternatives to what you know, this amendment provides. I think you also pointed out one other thing that I should mention about what's wrong with this amendment. The geography question. You talked about how, whether you like it or not, there are parts of the state that lean towards Democrats or lean towards Republicans, even specific towns and cities. We all know how they vote. That's part of the problem here. The thing that Dick likes to talk about as the one really key provision for the amendment is this prohibition on partisan gerrymandering, but that's unenforceable because everybody knows where the Democrats live. Everybody knows where the Republicans live. You know, you can't really prove that when they drew the line a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, that they did it while looking at tables of voter registration. But they didn't need to, right? Because they knew that, you know, the city over there leans towards Democrats and the rural area over here leans towards Republicans. And, you know, you can draw on any principle, even good principles, like maintaining communities of interest, another one that's listed in the amendment, and use that to justify the very same lines that effectively gerrymander the maps for one party or the other party. Because geography is, you know, is what it is in politics.
Well, that's what they say in real estate. Geography is destiny. Well, as a former boss of mine used to say, I'm still confused, but at a higher plane. This is the People's Business on WRPI Troy, and we have been speaking with Jesse Lehman, the former executive director of Effective New York, and now the director of the No On Prop 1 campaign, and sounds like a campaign finance reform campaign to be named later. Jesse, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Thank you for having us on.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.
If you would like to learn more about Jesse and the work of Effective New York, or the work of Effective New York where Jesse used to be, visit its website, effectiveny.org. For information from Effective New York and its allies about the redistricting constitutional amendment, visit the No on Prop 1 website, www.noprop1theNY.com. So a couple of confusing websites we have here. NoProp1NY.com for the no side, and vote yes for with the number 4 progress.org. So this is almost as confusing as the constitutional amendment, remembering these websites.
Ron, it's hard to do.
Ron, you recently joined the leaders of several good government groups in sending a letter to State Controller Tom DiNapoli, asking his office to take a closer look at several big tax subsidy projects. What exactly are you calling for, and what organizations are involved in this effort?
So I'm glad you mentioned that, Frank. The thing, we're actually calling upon the comptroller to look at these ever-growing tax subsidy programs like the Brownfield Tax Credit, the Film Tax Credit, the Excelsior Jobs Credit, and about 47 other tax credits that have been mushrooming over the years. They've literally tripled in value. But these programs, to say the least, lack transparency, lack accountability. So groups like NYPIRG and Reinvent Albany and Citizens Union and Citizen Action and a number of League of Women Voters, a lot of the good government groups really joined together in asking the comptroller to take a closer look at these programs, in particular with an eye on the transparency issue. So these groups aren't working on whether or not these subsidies are effective, but they want to make sure that they're more transparent. And I think we get to the point where we'll know whether they're effective or not by creating more transparency. We just don't know who's getting these subsidies. Are they utilizing these subsidies to create jobs? Are these subsidies effective? So I think that's important to note. And, you know, we're going to continue to not only pressure the comptroller to look at this, but the legislature as well, because, as you know, this governor certainly put state spending under a microscope. He's instituted a 2% self-imposed state spending cap. But yet we're not looking at these type of programs that benefit big business. A cynical person, unlike myself, Frank, might suggest that, you know, the governor is shielding many of his campaign donors, who are in fact the ones that are receiving these tax subsidies. So I think we need a harder look at this, and I'm hoping that the comptroller will help us out.
Well, good luck on that. I think it's an important Thanks. Battle. State Controller Ned Regan, who was a skeptic of a lot of tax subsidy programs, on at least two occasions, after having announced that he would do audits of programs that had a smell to them, had to announce in more than one case that what he had found out, that there wasn't enough information to tell what the program was doing.
Right. That therein lies the problem.
In terms of the upcoming elections, the Siena Research Institute at Siena College in Loudonville released three polls yesterday dealing with the 41st, 46th, and 55th Senate districts, and they had some very interesting results, not just for the Senate elections, which are taking a surprising turn. But compared to the statewide polls, Rob Astorino is doing very well in these districts.
So, you know, Frank, we've talked many times on this show about the power-sharing arrangement in the state Senate. There are a number of very closely watched races that everyone's paying attention to right now that are really going to determine who controls the state Senate next year. So you highlighted three particular races. These are three races where new Democrats were elected in 2012, which was a presidential year, so obviously there was higher turnout. Terry Gibson down in the Hudson Valley is actually behind in the polls now to Sue Serino by about 12 points, according to Siena. Closer to the Capital District, Cece Katchik looks to be trailing George Amador, former assemblyman, who many people say that Senate seat was drawn for. Talk about redistricting. The polls have her down by about 10 points. And heading towards the West in Monroe County, incumbent Ted O'Brien looks to be down a significant number to a guy by the name of Rich Funke. So really, control of the state Senate is going to be resting on these three seats, one seat outside of Buffalo, where an incumbent Mark Grisanti lost his Republican primary, and then a few seats on Long Island as well. So, you know, the other point that you mentioned is that the governor does not seem to be doing all that well in some of these districts. And in fact, in the capital region, and this is the Katchik seat that stretches from our neck of the woods all the way down to Ulster County, the governor's losing to Astorino by 8 points, 43 to 35, with 11% going to Howie Hawkins, a friend of this program.
So, and among Democrats, Hawkins has 17 or 18%.
Right, right.
It's quite amazing.
It is. So, you know, I think a month out, you can't assume a whole lot from these polls. And look, let's note that Siena has been wrong on a few polls before. Last year, they had a 53-point swing when they predicted that the incumbent mayor of Rochester was going to win by 36 points, and he lost by 17 on primary day. So these things can and often do go wrong. But the polls right now are not looking so great for these Democrats incumbents in the state Senate.
Well, that's a bit surprising, I think, given, the governor had made a commitment to go out and campaign to flip the Senate to Democratic control. I don't see him out there campaigning too much for Katchik or Gibson, but you'd have to wonder, I mean, would that even help them? Obviously, it seems like Cece Katchik might be better served if the governor went out campaigning for George Amador.
True.
And in fact, the governor has talked about endorsing Grisanti, the Republican out in Western New York. So whatever agreement that he's made, we're not sure he's standing by it.
What a tangled web we weave. This is Ron Deutsch. I'm the executive director of New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. As always, joined in the studio by Frank Morrow, executive director emeritus of the Fiscal Policy Institute, and Brian McDonald, the legislative political director of AFSCME New York. We thank you very much for joining us here on WRPI in Troy for the People's Business, which is part of the Capital District Progressive Radio, as we try and cast a little sunshine on the ways in which government is doing and not doing the people's business. Now stay tuned for Democracy Now!